The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This is Mike Consul. Jeff Dorman is with me. Welcome to the Dorman Report for January 2024. Jeff and I just returned from San Diego, more specifically Carlsbad, California, and the VIP Americas meeting for 2024. Major turnout, wonderful event. We thought, or at least I thought, it would be a great idea to have Jeff Dorman talk about the event a little bit, fill you in on what VIP Americas is for those of you who are not familiar with it, and get some of his perspectives on what went on there. Jeff was not only an attendee, he was a participant in the meeting, of course. Jeff, well, welcome back to Florida from San Diego.
Yeah, it's nice to be back home, although it's a little chillier at 63. Of course, most of the people tuning into this would think 63 is t-shirt weather. But for us Floridians, it's cold. We're all wearing parkas.
Exactly. I know what you mean. I remember growing up in upstate New York and it would be, 32 degrees and we'd be running around in t-shirts saying it's so warm after we had like zero weather for a week. Yeah. At any rate, we had wonderful weather. Really, in San Diego, and the meeting I thought went off exceptionally well, and I believe we had a record turnout. Is that the case, Jeff?
We did, although that's never our objective to have a record turnout. We had 496 people registered, and the ratio between investors and influencers, like consultants and investment managers, was 3-1, which is our target, 3.05, so we're a little bit over. But good ratios. And we do that. We actually cut off registration when we start to exceed that ratio because everything we do is investor focused. And these meetings are designed to be a comfortable place for investors to come and participate. And it's really hard for them to be able to do that when they're outnumbered, 12-1, 11-1, as they are in most meetings, to be honest with you. So, it's very hard for them. They get mobbed. They can't really hold the conversation with the people they want to. And at VIP, they're able to because, again, we limit the number of people that can attend. And, that hits us in the pocketbook, but we don't care. It's still a very profitable event for us, and we're not greedy. What we're trying to do is to create an exceptional experience for everybody who attends. And you mentioned earlier, what is VIP? VIP are the initials for Visions, Insights, and Perspectives. And it's an investor conference that is, again, defined by the ratios between the capital seekers and the capital providers and influencers. And it's also defined by a lot of interaction. At a lot of conferences, you have to spend a lot of time in the lobby if you really want to connect with people. Don't get me wrong, people still do that at our events. But we have a lot of roundtable discussions throughout the event. Usually the way we'll do it is we'll have a panel or keynote, and they'll define the topic, and then everybody sits around the table and discusses it. And we've learned over the years, you've got to be careful about how you define these topics because you don't want it to be too property specific or too expertise specific. You want it to be things that people can discuss that everybody shares in common. How to deal with, limited resources, for example, or, how to deal with the current economic environment. How are you adjusting your portfolios and those sorts of things? Everybody has thoughts on this. So there are things that everybody can discuss.
Now, we had two different keynote speakers. One was an economic forecaster. She was using hardcore data to take a look forward. The other presentation was on artificial intelligence by a fellow, I believe, from Wired magazine. Talk a little bit about, they were just distinctly different subjects. What were your takeaways on those?
Danielle DiMartino Booth it's interesting. The audience was very divided. Some people really saw her as being fresh and not, you know, singing the old party line. And her message was that she's written a book actually about the Fed, and she thinks the Fed does more damage than positive long-term to the economy. And the keynote was the most aggressive Fed in history. And she was talking about the price that we're all paying now in terms of inflation, in terms of, you know, inflated asset pricing, and the risk of that bubble bursting, all being related to the actions that the Fed took. So again, some people thought, wow, that's really refreshing. It took a lot of courage to have somebody come in and kind of basically give a message that wasn't all that positive, because her outlook looking forward was that we've got some price yet to pay, and it's not going to be a soft landing. That was her message. Doesn't mean she's right, but that was her message. So some people took umbrage at that, thought, well, you know, you're starting off the conference with kind of a negative twist. But we started off the conference with some real thought-provoking discussion that was followed again by first an interview with Daniela. And then, you know, Daniela stuck around and interacted with the roundtable discussion groups when they were reporting back their findings of the discussions. And the discussions were really lively, really interesting. So I think it was a successful keynote. It just, again, had the audience somewhat divided. But that's good. If everybody's on the same page, then you really don't understand the issue. The only way you can understand
it. But, you know, I also thought that one of the things that was a little off-putting to some people, she was pretty cheeky in her presentation. She wasn't just giving information. She had a perspective on it, and a perspective in terms, she made a few different jabs at Stephen Schwarzman of Blackstone, referred to the former president as the orange man and the current president as I forget what the pejorative term was, but basically saying neither one of them are going to change anything. They're going to spend us into bankruptcy.
Her quote was, the orange man spends as much as the dead man.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, she was cheeky. She was trying to stir up some controversy. And, you know, look, we don't control what our keynotes say or do. They don't necessarily represent the perspective or the position of institutional real estate. We're just trying to introduce people to get the audience into dialogue. And from that perspective, she was very successful in doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And she commented, as you say, we broke out into breakout sessions, you know, each table, its own breakout session. And then she, when each table reported, of course, every table didn't report because it wasn't time for everybody, but those who wanted to report reported. And then she offered her input as well.
Right. So it was a really good interactive session, interactive amongst the roundtable discussion participants, and interactive between the participants and the keynote. So people really got a chance to challenge her as well, too, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and before you talk about the artificial intelligence keynote speaker, I did want to say the other thing that was discussed a little bit was that the numbers always look bad. The house is always burning. You know, you and I are old enough to remember Howard Ruff when he was writing his books about the coming next Great Depression. And since then, there has been book after book and presentation after presentation about the impending economic collapse of the United States or the global economy. And it's really never come to pass. Now, that's not to say, I mean, we have racked up a lot of debt over these years. It's not to say that we're not facing, about to face the music, but I think people have become inured to these prophecies of economic doom.
Well, look, you know, doom sells, unfortunately, you know, and good news doesn't so much. And that's part of the reason why you see a lot of doom and gloom on the daily news. I mean,
if it bleeds, it leads.
You could actually write tonight's news script without even knowing what the news is. You know, there was an auto accident here. Four people were killed. Somebody killed their wife. Another guy was murdered walking down the street and a gator ate somebody. I mean, it's almost the same almost every night, right?
Yeah.
Why do they do this? Well, there's a psychological principle behind it. You know, actually, when people are confronted with disturbing news, they tend to buy more luxury goods.
More luxury goods and more toilet paper.
Yeah,
as we learned during COVID.
It makes them feel better about themselves when they don't feel good about themselves. So, you know, predicting the future is an art. And it's not one that anybody's really mastered with any great exceptional ability.
Right.
You know, Yogi Berra probably said it best. It's hard to make predictions, especially about the future.
So the AI session, did I get that right, that the presenter, he's from Wired Magazine?
Yes.
And talk a little bit about what he had to say, maybe point to some of the things that really stood out to you.
Well, it was Jeremy White, and he's the senior innovation editor from Wired. And I think a couple of things stood out. I mean, there were a lot of things that stood out. One of the things that stood out is he had to cover way too much information in too short a period of time. But he's up to the task because he speaks very, very fast. But he's a good communicator. One of the things he stuck out was that AI is not intelligence, not the way that we know it. It's algorithms. It's programming. It's deep learning, but it's not self-aware. So it doesn't know. Like if it tells you that, if it writes an article about the future, it's just using algorithms to make predictions. It doesn't understand what it's talking about. It's not really intelligent the way that we think of intelligence. I don't know if you've seen some of the movies that have come out. There was one with Johnny Depp, forget the name of it, but he was assassinated by some terrorists who infused him with this cancerous radioactive substance. And he knew he was going to die, so he uploaded his intelligence into a machine. And then he became super intelligent as he linked all the computers in the world together and started doing these incredibly amazing things. But that's not what artificial intelligence is. It's not a real live thinking thing. It's a series of programs. So, I mean, that's one of the things that he made that really stuck with me. Of course, I kind of knew that, but I hadn't really thought about the implications. And there's so many doomsday people that talk about, you know, AI taking over and figuring out that humans are unnecessary and dangerous and all that sort of thing. Didn't sound like that's really what's likely to happen based on what his understanding of what the evolving field of AI is. He also suggested that it's not going to be as much of a job displacer as it's going to be a job enhancer. It's interesting. You know, we had a discussion about this sitting around the dinner table last July when I was up fishing with my group we call the Johnsons after the town in Blazing Saddles where everybody was named Johnson. And everybody in the group has a Johnson name. But we started talking about this, and the guide that the outfitter that owns the place that we were staying in said, remember what everybody said about Y2K. And then remember what everybody said about how much leisure time we have after the internet was in, and after personal computers were. He says, I don't know about you, but I'm working 24/7 now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what people think is going to happen as a result of these things oftentimes isn't the way they turn out. And I think that was part of the message that Jeremy was making. Again, he covered so much ground, I couldn't even begin to summarize, you know, what he made. But you had to be there. It was really interesting. And again, we got into roundtable discussions, and those were interesting. And I believe he stuck around to interact with the group again. So that was kind of fun. It was interesting things. And again, anybody can talk about these kind of things. Around the round tables, a lot of people were talking about what they were doing at their firms in terms of harnessing the power of AI. And he also talked a lot about a generative AI, you know, the ChatGPT and how it's evolving. And said it's not like having, you know, 1,000 MIT PhDs working for you. it's more like having 1,000 college interns working for you. You know, a lot of information floating around, but not a lot of wisdom.
Well, and it's almost a, you know, I use ChatGPT and Bard from Google, and it's almost an enhanced version of just Googling, where it's a little bit more of a interactive feel. It's very fast, and it really gives you the best answer it has available. It thinks it's got available, rather than a whole list of different different resources.
The point he was making is it doesn't think at all. It's not a thinking machine. It's a machine.
Yes. Yes.
It's just either on or off switches. It's digital information process. It's not the same as thinking.
Right. Yeah.
So, and he said, if you're going to use it, don't rely on it. Do your own fact checking, because it's not always correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's right.
And it will argue that it is correct when it's not correct in some cases.
Yeah. And the conclusions it draws may not be correct. So yeah. Again, can it help you? He said using it, he encourages people to use it. He said it challenges you to think, just again, like our first speaker did. But you've got to think. It doesn't replace thinking. It just is an aid. It's a tool. It's something you can use. But it's not going to replace humans anytime soon. At least he didn't think so.
Yeah. Well, and there were people who said that they've eliminated some jobs because of AI. But one of the attendees I talked with said, you know, the only thing it's replaced is the very repetitive type of work that it's hard to hire for and hard to retain people because it's so boring. It's a kind of work that human beings don't really want to do, much better suited to something like some kind of AI, something automated, something robotic, because we just don't have the constitution to just do the same thing over and over again and find value in it.
Another point he made is that this has been going on since the 40s and 50s. It's not a new idea. Both automation and artificial intelligence or algorithms driving decision-making. It's been an evolution. It isn't something that just all of a sudden, wham, happened. Now, there were some innovations in 2013, 2014, and since then that have accelerated the process. But, you know, there's a convergence of all kinds of things that are happening, including computing power, internet speed, connectivity, and innovations in programming that have all led to this all, what feels like an explosion that's all of a sudden just happening, but it really has been an evolutionary process. And that's
yes. Yeah. You know, I just finished reading Sapiens by Mr. Harari. I believe you read that as well, Jeff, in the final chapter in that book. Talks about the future in kind of an Alvin Toffler type of, you know, future shock mm-hmm. sort of thing. The stuff that we're working on, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and the stuff that we're working on is going to pose some real challenges in terms of just our ability to feel comfortable with it, to feel that, I mean, he literally said that sapiens likely will cease to exist as sapiens, that we're going to become these augmented beings with everything from bionics to implanted chips and so on.
Well, so, you know, we're almost there now.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Appendages that not only replace maybe an arm that's been lost, but can even be operate a second or third appendage that's lying a state or a nation away that through thought processes can be made to act, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. Obviously that's a network effect there.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting what's going on. And again, as Yogi Berra said, it's really hard to make predictions, especially about the future.
You know, one of the best indicators of the future, I think, believing in the wisdom of crowds, Jeff, is the mood of an audience. What did you feel like the mood was of the audience at VIP Americas?
Well, I think, you know, look, We are all subjected to information overload. That's something that Alvin Toffler wrote about 30 or 40 years ago. And John Nesbitt also wrote about that problem. And
yes.
His conclusion was that high tech demands a high touch response. In other words, we're empowered by the technology, but it makes us hunger for connection with each other, real human connection. I don't think that the mood at VIP could be characterized by how people felt about what's going on in the real estate. I think what it was characterized by, just the absolute delight of being together. People like to connect with each other. And, you know, this is one of the most collegial industry segments, this institutional real estate investment market, that I've ever stumbled across. And people really care about each other. And so I think just the fact that they can get together and socialize with each other and debate issues and listen and talk with each other, whether it be in the hallways or whether it be in the around a cocktail party or one of the social activities or one of the round tables, they're just delighted to be together. Again, I think, you know, some people were a little down by the opening keynote, but that passed, I think, pretty quickly. There's so much to look forward to. And people were divided as to how the year is going to pan out. Some people see green shoots in terms of the denominator problem starting to self-correct, in terms of there being a lot more interest in getting ready to make investments again. And the high turnout of investors and consultants, I think, why would they come out if they were going to be sitting on their hands? I think, you know, they're interested and excited about getting re-engaged in the process of allocating capital. There was also a lot of talk about where the opportunities might lie. And again, people somewhat divided on that, but interesting places. From the office sector, surprise, surprise, to retail sector, to all the non-core sectors that have been attracting people's attention lately. I think people are being very thoughtful and very smart about the way they're looking at the markets right now. And as we advise them, you know, there's a lot of opportunity when things are going through disruption as they are right now. But you can't look for them in the same places you looked at them, look for them when you were when times were different. So each time kind of defines a different opportunity set. And I think people are hungry to identify those opportunity sets right now. And so coming together and talking about them was, I think, really something that people welcome.
Yeah, I wonder if some of that excitement isn't that what we're seeing is even new asset classes, whether it's cryptocurrency or artificial intelligence, where it's broadening out. And even though people are, these are real estate people, all these technologies have a profound impact on all industries. And you've made the point before that real estate has traditionally been slow to adopt technology. But I think that that dam has kind of broken, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, look, at the last CEO summit that we did, it was a few years ago, right before the pandemic in New York. We ran around the table, and usually we don't have huge turnouts for these. They're usually very small, intimate gatherings of CEOs of major firms. And there were about 16 sitting around the table. All but one admitted that they had at least one, and almost all of them, two data scientists on board. Boy, 5 years earlier, they wouldn't have been able to spell data science. I mean, that's unfair. Of course they would, but they just weren't focused on data as a resource. I think one of the fellows that was there is the CEO of a major, you know, international brokerage firm, and he made the comment that he felt that their data is worth more than the transaction business today. But the question is how to monetize. So that's kind of where people are right now. They're trying to figure out, you know, how can they harness the power of these new technologies to make better decisions? That's really where people are at. Mm-hmm. You know, how can they use it to underwrite property markets better? How can they use it to find two properties sitting across the street from the other, which one's more likely to outperform? Those kinds of applications are things that people are thinking. And then how do you automate and streamline your investment management processes so that you can accomplish more without having to add staff? That's another question people are trying to answer.
So coming full circle back to Daniela Booth, one of the points that she was making was, you know, are we headed for a soft landing or a hard landing here in 2024? And that question was really brought to the tables. Perhaps I think there were some people who thought hard landing, but not in 2024, 2025. One of the people at my table said, being an election year, I just think that the presidential administration is going to provide the tailwind necessary to carry us through 2024 in the election. And then perhaps 2025, we face the music. Did you have any sense of that from the audience, whether people were feeling that we are in the midst of a soft landing or whether a hard landing is in the near term?
I heard people say we've already had a soft landing. I've heard people say that we're heading for a soft landing. I've heard people saying that we're just in the midst of a hard landing, or it's just starting, or we're going to experience it over the next 2 years. Who's right? I don't know, right? But I do know this. Let's assume it's a hard landing, right? Mm-hmm. There are going to be people who lose money during a hard landing. There are also going to be people who make a lot of money during that hard landing. There is always opportunity no matter what's going on. You just have to keep your eyes open and you have to insulate yourself from the downside as much as you possibly can, because markets, if they go up, and markets, if they go down, as the famous Father Guido Sarducci said on Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you remember the skit.
I do.
He said he was going to start a university. It's only going to take 5 minutes and only last, you know, only cost $5. And the way you can do that is, instead of teaching you everything that you learned in college, he's going to teach you everything you remembered in college 20 years later. So Spanish 1A is going to be almost stop. And economics 1A was going to be the markets that should go up or the markets that should go down.
Yeah, he was a funny guy. Those were some great sketches on SNL. Yeah. So just in closing, Jeff, any final thoughts about the conference or anything related to it?
Well, all I would say is if you're interested in coming to VIP and you have never come before, when the registration opens, register early. Don't wait. Because we do close registration. And it's always open to investors and consultants. We don't have a limit on how many that we'll take. But we do limit the number of investment management types and placement agent types that we're allowed to register based on not exceeding a 3-to-1 ratio. We really take that seriously. And we do it again because we're investor focused and want to create a comfortable climate for the investors. And not everybody who sponsors conferences can do that. You know, we're in a unique position to be able to do it. So register early. You'll be glad you came to this. It's a very, very special event. It's a very warm event. And I know that the people who attended know exactly what I'm talking about. And the people that didn't haven't got a clue, but it really is a different kind of event. And I hope you'll join us next time.